From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We have 25 days left in the calendar before the state runs out of spending authority for many vital services in the state of Illinois.
People can continue to incur costs, but at some point we can't pay them. There's just no money unless we have a balanced budget that may or may not include revenue depending on what the four of us decide.
Governor Rauner wants to do a lame duck tax increase. So he wants to raise taxes between now and January 11. That proposal is not doing well because both Democrats and Republicans are against it in a lame duck session.
Governor Rauner and Comptroller Munger are inappropriately and illegally withholding lawmakers' paychecks. We are a separate but equal branch of government, and this action is unconstitutional.
I'm asking that the legislators drop this lawsuit. This lawsuit should not be pursued. I think it's an insult to the taxpayers of Illinois.
Speaking of insults to the taxpayers, it's been 1 year, 5 months, and 9 days since Illinois government had a full regular budget. Legislative leaders continue painting their counterparts in the other party as the main obstacle. Meanwhile, rank-and-file lawmakers have gone without pay since June, and now a group of Democrats are suing, saying it's an attempt to coerce them into going along with Governor Bruce Rauner's agenda. We'll talk about that and more this week on State Week. I'm Brian Mackey, sitting in for Sean Crawford. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, and Mark Brown, a columnist at the Chicago Sun-Times. Mark, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be on the line here.
So let's start with budget talks. Amanda, this week we had the legislative leaders were scheduled at least to meet a couple of times. They'd met over last weekend, but things took a turn midweek.
It seems as if a meeting that they were going to have on Thursday was canceled by Governor Bruce Rauner. His administration says that it's because Democrats had voiced their desire to speak with rank-and-file legislators, to go back and get their opinion on things. And when Rauner's folks reached out, they heard back that House Democrats hadn't yet had the opportunity to do so. So they said canceled the meeting, or delayed it, I believe is the term that the administration has been using. But really what this comes down to is Democrats coming back and saying it's yet again the governor who they say and truthfully has failed to present a truly balanced budget since taking over wants them to do the dirty work basically for them, wants Democrats to come forward with a budget framework, presumably one that would include some sort of tax increase in order to get it to that point of being balanced. And then those calls that you've already heard from Rauner, in which he says Madigan talked about raising taxes to 5%, that he would be able to really hammer that point home. I do want to There's plenty to discuss about, obviously, the leaders' meeting, but wanted to take this opportunity to make a point about that, because something else that's kind of interesting is you've had Madigan calling it a lame duck tax increase desired by Rauner, really trying to put the ownership into the governor's hands. As I noted, the governor trying to do the same back on Madigan. And whenever he does that, he uses basically he's referring to a time where about a year ago, the speaker gave a talk at the City Club of Chicago and was asked a question about tax increases. And sort of tongue-in-cheek, if you really listen to and know the speaker's sense of humor and how he handles these sort of things, he did not directly say, though this is how Republicans and some news stories, frankly, framed it, we should raise taxes to 5%. Sort of tongue-in-cheek was how I think it sounded. He said, 5% would be a good place to start, something along those lines. He kind of riffed on that. And
I think he said you could go up or down. He said you could go up or down from there, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because 5% was what it had been.
Right. And it's kind of turned into something and torpedoed from there and is constantly now used in Republican rhetoric, which, of course, there's a lot of that rhetoric going on. Democrats not void of accusing the GOP by any means. But while these leaders' meetings have gone on, you cannot take away from the stream of press releases and the website and such that Republicans are really upping the ante, almost like they're still running a campaign or have started a brand new one in a way that I do think is very separate from how Democrats are handling things.
Well, let's come to that campaign point in a moment. Mark, I wanted to ask you, you invoked Groundhog Day in a recent column talking about trying to cover the budget stalemate here. Are we seeing anything different now? Could we have been basically having this same conversation a year ago at this point?
I think we were, weren't we? Isn't that the last time you had me on? No, I mean, it's a very frustrating. And as I was listening to Amanda, I think my blood pressure was going up because it's just so frustrating to be going through the same motions again and again. And you do it so well, Amanda. I just have like thrown up my hands, and I can't play it straight on this. It's just I don't think we're making any progress. None. I'm afraid we're worse off than we were a year ago, because now back then we still had hope. I've lost hope.
Well, Charlie, have you lost hope?
Mark, though, can I just add quickly? Yeah. It's not just worse off because of a lack of hope. It's also that the United States, frankly, is entering a big period of uncertainty with great change in Washington. So we're at that point in time. And further, Illinois has now uncertainty piled on top of uncertainty. So the longer that this goes on, the worse Illinois is able to recover if there were to be any sort of true economic downfall. The backlog of bills is increasing. The deficit is increasing. So it's an overused metaphor, but a really apt one, that the longer you go without paying the credit card bills, the higher and higher the interest is going to rise, and the tougher it is to dig out of that hole. So it's a lack of hope. I think further strained relations between the leadership and just Illinois from a fiscal standpoint, and all of the entities that therefore depend on the state government, have wiped out their opportunities for issuing lines of credit, perhaps going to the volunteers or to people asking to give them money as sort of a charitable contribution. All of that is worse off as well. So truly, the message is, the longer this goes on, the worse things get, and yet there's no sign of it stopping.
Charlie. Well, and part of the difficulty is that even though we haven't had a full budget in well over a year, fully enacted budget, we're still spending money at a rate that is totally unsustainable compared to our revenues, because there are so many what are called continuing appropriations, state laws that require money to go out the door no matter what. There are court orders, there are consent decrees that the state has agreed to, and so we're spending money at a clip of roughly $36 billion a year, although the money coming in is at about $32 billion a year. And the backlog that is in the comptroller's office is in excess of $10 billion. And this is when we have an estimated revenue for this fiscal year in the general funds of roughly $32 billion. So it just gets worse day to day. And I just wish the principals would stop poisoning the well, because they're all going to have to drink from the well sooner or later. And it's just idiotic to continue with this scorched earth policy that the Republicans are doing, blaming Madigan for every disaster. I'm surprised they didn't blame him for Pearl Harbor Day. And here we are, falling deeper and deeper into the hole. The fact of the matter is, we're not going to have a balanced budget. If you define balanced in terms of at the end of the fiscal year, we'll have money in the bank. No one would stand for the tax increases or the program cuts necessary to balance the budget at the end of the fiscal year. As a matter of fact, the Illinois, the Institute of Government and Public Affairs over at the U of I suggested that maybe if we have fiscal discipline, if we raise taxes, if we cut spending, maybe after 10 years we'll be on sound footing. So this nonsense about, oh, we want a balanced budget, you just make it more difficult to get anywhere.
Well, and Charlie, you talked about the atmosphere down here. We've seen a website, and the Republicans are putting a lot of effort into trying to make Democrats squirm over whether House Speaker Michael Madigan will be reelected. We've seen video trackers, which I think is pretty unusual. Yeah, I mean, I do remember that then, what was he, State Senator Barack Obama had one, but that was a national campaign when he was running in 2004. I think at the state level, I'm not aware of that happening in the past.
Well, there have been trackers, but not this early, not when there isn't a campaign. I mean, that to me is the difference.
Well, this is the governor's,
what is going on now.
This is the governor's campaign back from the summer of 2014, still continuing. He's never stopped campaigning long enough to start being a governor, in my estimation.
Mark, do you think we're in a permanent campaign here in Illinois now? Is that
well, we clearly are.
Yeah.
You know, whether we can break out of it or not, I don't know. I mean, the governor seems pretty clear that he thinks that this is normal business. I mean, we're always in everything is always in a campaign mode, right? It's just at a different level. These you know, press releases that are going out every day, taunting Democrats over, you know, first whether they support the speaker and now whether they support a quote Chicago school bailout. You know, and I mean, I'm afraid though that they're probably being effective. I mean, I think their game plan here is a long range, you know, take over the whole state in 2 years, and that's the way they're going to play this. I don't know how to get out of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a good point. I think it's worth reminding people that what's at the heart of the budget impasse is Governor Rauner wants to impose an agenda on Illinois that Democrats, who still control both the House and Senate, find unacceptable. And the dessert for approving the vegetables of that agenda, if you will, is the opportunity to vote for a tax hike, which nobody really seems that enthusiastic. Well, I mean, a few people might be enthusiastic about that in Springfield, but it's still something that both sides are trying to distance themselves from. And as you point out, Mark, I think that's a good point, that a lot of the governor's policy ideas, if you extend them out a few years, seem to be designed to undermine key elements that support the Democratic Party, either government employee unions, which are a good fundraising source for Democrats, trial lawyers. The governor has talked about changing workers' compensation system and the tort law system, which kind of goes after that. Other key constituency of the Democratic Party. And of course, redistricting, term limits, all that stuff appears to be a sort of long-range attack on the Democrats. Charlie, you look like you're about to...
Oh, no, I agree totally. It's...
But those are reforms, guys. Those are all reforms.
Well, and okay.
I'm sorry.
No, this is a good point. So I wanted to ask you, Mark, because this week you wrote a column suggesting that perhaps it's time the Democrats, I'm going to paraphrase, throw the governor a bone on term limits, which is one of his latest...
Well, you know, I'm interested that you did call it throwing him a bone, because I'm trying not to even look at it that way. I'm just looking at, okay, the Democrats are stuck. We're all stuck. And the reason the governor has seized on this term limits thing is that it's something that people in the state of Illinois really want. Now, I don't think it's a particularly good idea. If it came to a vote, I would probably vote against it. I may well campaign against it if it got to the ballot. But I think that it's an issue that where you could go, you know, there's this impasse, and somehow you got to get some movement, and that to me is one where it's reasonable to allow the people of Illinois to have a vote on that. I mean, a real vote, and whether Rauner could use that as, oh, look what I did for you, people of Illinois, I got your term limits, fine by me, you know, if that's what they want. I mean, but the Democrats, you know, they could say, oh, we got this for you, too. It would move things. And it's not going to happen, so we shouldn't probably waste a lot of time on it.
I think that is the least likely, perhaps. Out of all of them, that is the least likely, I think, to actually get a vote for exactly the reasons that you talked about, and that is because it is so popular with the public, any legislator would be very hard-pressed to vote against it, and therefore calling it for a vote would basically force it to pass. And so right now, you have Democrats just not calling it for a vote because they have that ability to do so, and is why they're doing it. So I think people like the governor, beyond the fact that this helps him and Republicans have a talking point, I do think that there are plenty of people in the public, and one of those includes Rauner himself, that truly believe that this is a would lead to positive change for Illinois. Because, and I know Charlie has often talked about the fact that really probably Speaker Madigan wouldn't really be affected because of when this takes place. But the point being that I think there are those who look at Speaker Madigan as the poster child for why they believe term limits need to be enacted to maybe get rid of him, but to make sure that there isn't another him going forward. They think that that has poisoned Illinois. There are, of course, as you noted, Mark, plenty of actually academic discussions that we could have about the pros and cons of term limits and how that would go about. But I, like I said, I just think that it is, of all of the elements of the quote-unquote turnaround agenda, probably the one that is least likely to actually go forward. Things like pensions, education funding, workers' compensation, those we could actually see a change happen. That to me is far more likely.
Yeah, and it occurs to me too. I'm very much opposed to term limits in the sense that I subscribe to the notion that there is an election every 2 years for the Illinois House. And so therefore, if people don't like their incumbent, they can vote them out. And people say, well, we really don't have a choice. We need term limits to force them out. And I would say where the problem lies is in the way that districts are drawn so that they're not competitive. If you don't like your legislator because he's a mope and you're in a solid Republican district or a solid Democratic district, when that legislator is term limited out, the next one is just as likely to be a mope that you won't like. And as a matter of fact, let's assume term limits were put into place and existed back in 2007. Of the people who were elected to the and took office in the Illinois House in 2007, how many of them do you think are going to be around to take the oath in 2017? I counted up. There's going to be 32 of them. So that means 86 already are out, either defeated, retired, running, and elected to something else. And among the people who are holdovers, of course, are Mike Madigan, but then so are the Republican leaders, so is Senate President John Cullerton. So I don't think that that is really going to do anything to improve our business climate. And so to focus on term limits, when I think you could work something out on workers' compensation or the way personal injury lawsuits are handled, things that would have an immediate impact, it seems to me that's where the focus should be.
Well, and it's not only this question, I think, is everyone has pointed out this is politically popular with voters in Illinois. It's also something that I think we saw Democrats 2 years ago, for example, put a minimum wage referendum on the ballot, the so-called millionaires tax on the ballot in an effort to gin up turnout. I think Democrats would be loath to put one of Governor Rauner's signature issues on the ballot for 2018 when he's going to be running for re-election if they think that would help his turnout. You're listening to State Week. Our panel this week is Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and Mark Brown of the Chicago Sun-Times. I'm Brian Mackey. We also had, within the last week, it actually broke Friday after we had taped last week, but a lawsuit filed in Cook County over legislators whose paychecks have been delayed. They were put at the back of the line. Illinois has, as Charlie pointed out earlier, a huge pile of bills and not enough money coming in to pay them as they come in. And so there's a long wait. Some vendors have been waiting months and months. Some medical groups that treat state employees have been waiting more than a year for payment. Amanda, can you just take us through the what haven't I mentioned about this here? The legislators are basically suing, saying that what is their argument?
So they are suing to say that they, because the Constitution says that a legislator's or elected official's pay cannot be diminished during their term, that this, in short, is that. Further, there's an argument about separation of powers and whether any executive branch, so the governor, the comptroller, is able to make a decision that has a, this an impact on another branch of government. They're supposed to be equal, or the executive branch isn't supposed to be able to make these sort of decisions, because as came about when the former governor, Pat Quinn, tried to completely withhold legislators' pay during, in order to bring about a vote on basically overhauling the state's pension systems, the thought was, well, when else? If you can have a governor have that ability, anytime he wants to dangle an issue and put it as a priority, he could make paying legislators susceptible to that. That's part of why Illinois has systems in place that automatically, it's different now, but for a long time it was basically automatic pay raises, because so often it's politically difficult for a legislator to vote to raise his or her own pay. And yet there are those that believe this is a job that, though technically part-time, and for many people it is, for others it is very much a full-time occupation and needs to be paid well, so you don't have only the people who are wealthy enough running for office. I mean, this is, again, a very deep discussion. But when it comes down to it, that is the legal argument. Further, the legislators argue that it's easy for the governor and comptroller Leslie Munger to have said, hey, no pay without a budget, or delayed pay without a budget, because they are both, of course, individually wealthy. The governor making nearly $200 million, according to his last tax returns. So that is all of what is at play. But of course, I think there's very much a lot of people that are frustrated with that. Why are legislators deserving to be paid when they have not done their jobs in passing a budget, one of the most basic duties that there is?
Well, and I would argue that the governor has yet to do his job of proposing an honest budget either. I mean, I think the blame needs to be shared by everyone. I find it ironic, also, the governor, Amanda, as you pointed out, he is extremely wealthy. From his reportable income last year, he has enough funds that he could fully fund the legislative branch, not just legislative salaries, but the cost of the whole shebang in the last year in which
staffers
we had—
staffers and everything else.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all the support agencies, like the outfit that draws up the bills, the people that do the research, the Commission on Government Financing and Accountability, COGFA, all of it. In FY15, the last year we had a full budget, was $120 million, and Rauner's reportable income was $185. So for him, he could fund, as I say, the whole third branch without feeling any pain. And there are people who, believe it or not, are in the legislature elected by their constituents who are not extraordinarily wealthy, who make it a full-time career, and who depend on the paycheck. Plus, they have the law on their side and the Constitution on their side. So, yeah, I know
it's bothersome. Well, to me, there is a true question.
Hmm? Yeah, I want to get Mark in here to say, I mean, you... go ahead.
I wanted to point out the politically tricky part of this, where they filed the suit 3 days before the comptroller switched from Republican Leslie Munger to Democrat Susana Mendoza, which sort of messes up the whole argument. Oh, we're just doing this. They've just been doing this to put pressure on the Democrats to cave to Rauner, because now Mendoza's in there, and as part of the political campaign, you know, she had to jump in there four square on the same side of the issue as Munger in favor of withholding their pay on the same weak argument. Who knows what she really thinks, but she's pledged to stick with that position unless a court overturns it. So, I mean, from trying to write the story, I can tell you it makes it a little trickier, doesn't it, guys? You know?
Very much.
I mean, Mark, you have written a lot about the people who are being crushed under the weight of the budget impasse over the past year and a half or so. And so I think you even wrote this week that it's hard to feel sympathy for legislators who have not been getting paid when there are so many people who are being hurt much more deeply.
But I do think they should get paid.
Right. And but I mean, because there's a constitutional question here. Do you think it's has it been working? I mean, do you get a sense that there is increased pressure because of this issue to that, you know, suddenly Democrats are going to throw in their lot with Governor Rauner on some of his more controversial agenda items?
I don't think so. I think some of them hate him all the much more. But I do believe, actually, yes, I do believe that individual legislators in this state are hurting. They're not, you know, there's half of them that probably got outside jobs, and the lawyers are all doing fine, right? They're still making their money. But the people who really do pursue this as a full-time job, it's going 6 months now without we're in the seventh month without getting paid. That'll mess you up. And in some level, I'm sure they're feeling personal pressure to get something done on top of just the, you know, their pressure from their constituents.
Well, we just have a few more minutes before we wrap at the end of the show. Amanda, as we've talked about now, Susana Mendoza was sworn in as the new Illinois controller. She's got a 2-year term. And then this was a special election triggered after Democrats passed it by the death of Judy Bartopinka a couple of years ago. We have already seen some change to the way Illinois cuts its paychecks. Can you go over the bonus issue that came up this week?
So again, this is a bit complicated because there are several bonus issues at this point in time. One has to do with AFSCME members that has been held up. The governor wanted to give those with good attendance an extra $1,000. This is not that. What is at issue now here is bonuses that are in the millions of dollars collectively given to managerial individuals, those who are not any member of a union. And this was an issue during the campaign when you saw Munger basically pay out these bonuses, and she said she had no choice. This was a decision by the governor and state agencies, and with the processes in the comptroller's office, was just unable to separate any bonuses from standard paychecks, which, as we're talking about the budget impasse, the reason state employees at all levels are getting paid is because of a court decision. So, but per court order, she has to pay employees, and she, again, couldn't separate the bonuses from the regular pay. But Mendoza, during the campaign, during a debate, had said, nope, I believe that there is a way to do it. And lo and behold, days into office, she has issued basically an edict to agencies that says, going forward, they need to separate those bonuses from those pay. So what they couldn't say for sure is how much had already been paid out or what had been given to the comptroller's office. But it is a change in policy and also, I think, a political jab.
Well, this is just, I guess, another example of a way that a change in party in the controller's office could potentially create some headaches for Governor Rauner as he's trying to implement his policies and push his agenda through the legislature here in Illinois. That's something we'll be watching in the weeks ahead. That is our time for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Mark Brown of the Chicago Sun-Times, and possibly for the last time, at least as a regular panelist, Amanda Vinicky, our Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief. Amanda, congratulations. You're moving to Chicago.
Yes, we'll be reporting still on state government, but for WTTW Public Television, Chicago Tonight program.
Yeah, well, the Chicago PBS audience's gain is our loss here at the public radio stations across Illinois. So it's been great working with you, and we wish you the best of luck. I hope you'll come back and be a guest on our show.
But of course, public radio, love always, and thanks so much to all of the dedicated State Week listeners.
You can get a podcast of State Week at nprillinois.org or on the NPR One app. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.